trying to get comfortable here. What should I do about that? Should I go down? I'm thinking about lowering to the earth.
See, those chairs have so many options.
Yeah.
You can raise these up.
I don't like that.
The armrests.
I don't think that armrests should be a choice. It's just,
the designer should have come up with the precise ratio, and that's it.
I believe most of our upper arms are the same length.
You may have a feeling, maybe you don't want to have them down by your waist. Maybe you want your elbows out a little bit. Some people like that because you can shake and...
I would say for many, many years we went without the choice, and we all were fine. And now we can do it. For example, when I came here, I sat down in this chair. This left armrest was like 3 inches higher than the right armrest. You know, so you're going to end up with crooked stuff like that, and you're going to live with it because you don't like moving.
It seems unnecessary.
Like this. So it was like that, and this one was way down here, which actually feels good now that I'm doing it.
So you've ruined your own theory now.
I take it back. I love the armrest maneuverability, which we didn't have in the old days, and people suffered from just, you know, because we don't all have the same upper arm length, I just learned.
I like how in the course of about a minute and a half, you've completely turned yourself around.
Yeah.
Isn't that great when that happens in life, when you confront something, this long-held belief? Armrests should be at exactly one height. There's no reason for us to have adjustable armrests. And then...
Right.
Something happened. Your point of view was completely turned around 180 degrees, and now you feel like, you know what? We live in a better world. We're in a civilized nation now because we can adjust our armrests.
Yeah, and you know what? I rest my case. I don't know if there's a...
Well, you didn't have a case.
Well, I think that's the thing about
me. You've thrown the case out.
I don't think there's an opinion that I have that I can't swing quickly around on to the opposite. It's sort of like it's kind of an Achilles heel, but then it's refreshing because now I'm pretty happy. You know, I was complaining about this thing. I was like grumbly. Oh, armrests! We have to have armrests that we can control. But now I feel kind of like sort of childlike.
It's a new world of possibilities.
Yeah, I'm sort of like, hey, this is fun.
Yeah,
and I'm back in the fun seat.
You went from grumpy old man to the future is bright.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. But see, that's a better way to be, isn't it?
It could be. I mean, I don't know what it's like to be rigid. So I could have tried to secretly maintain my opinion that armrests are terrible, even while sensing my own pleasure in having one armrest much higher than the other.
Do you do that sometimes because you've staked your claim? You've staked a claim, now you feel like you have to defend it, even though the argument you can see in your head, in the back of your mind, you can see, uh-oh. This isn't going well for my opinion. I know that I'm probably on the wrong side of this, but I've staked my claim. I have to defend it. I've gone this far with it.
I don't think there's much in the world that I have too deeply a claim on. So if in the middle of an argument or a debate, if I can see the other side of it, I'll go there.
You're happy to concede.
Yeah, because... And it is all relative, so it's probably that if we kept going with the armrest thing, I mean, probably I'd come around to maybe a deeper truth that it's terrible. And then
we could do an hour on it. I bet you'd flip-flop three or four times.
Yeah. I think it means I'm not a very deep thinker, or that my thoughts really rely on my own felt experience at that moment. So I'm just really.
I think it means your feelings are on the surface. I don't think it has anything to do with deep thinking. You are open. You're open. You're not rigid. You're not closed. You're not an ideologue. You're open to interpretation.
I'll go with that because I'm flexible.
I like that. Right. Exactly.
Whatever you say, sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, I guess we should point out we are the Lamplighters, and I don't think we've done a Lamplighters podcast in many a month.
It feels to me like a month, but it's probably three. We would do them regular.
I don't think we've done one since the winter, have we? Because right now, as we speak, it's August.
I feel like it's much, I don't know.
Really?
I don't know.
I don't know when the last time we did it was.
You know, it's one of those, for me, it appears in my brain weekly as a thing, like an image. And so,
for you, the show is ongoing.
We do it all the time. Yeah, we're putting them out there regular, and it's really doing
well.
Yeah,
you're hearing them.
Yeah, have trouble. I do have trouble distinguishing between things that I imagine and things that are real. So if I think about something with any kind of intent, like if I write about it a little bit, it registers hard in my reality. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult for me to disentangle, sort of like truth from imagined.
So you have, if you have a running scenario in your head about something, you've maybe in your mind, you're thinking, okay, we've recorded, we did the Lamplighters, and here's what I would do if we were recording it. We talk about this, and then Rick would say this, and I'd probably say this. So for you, that, in a lot of ways, you have a hard time thinking, did this really happen, when you go and think about it again?
A little bit. Or I don't know if it has, or, So I've been thinking about Lamplighters this week, and the week before I thought about it. And so to me, it feels relatively fresh that we've been here. We've been in the space because I was imagining it. So maybe it's been like a year, or I don't know.
Maybe that, as a writer, maybe as somebody who is a storyteller, is that a prerequisite?
Confusion?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, is it, because I think if you are someone who, I think everybody does to a certain extent, but if you are someone who writes or you're someone who does creative work, you've got a lot of scenarios going on in your head. You have to run different things in your mind all the time.
Well, I think you can. I think you can lean a little harder into the non-experienced world. So for me, like a lot of my experience,
you need to. You need to be able to do that in order to create, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I think a lot of people have that, though. Mm-hmm. It's like just the difference between anything that you imagine, or if you're having a daydream about something.
Mm-hmm.
Even, things don't happen, they do happen in your head in some ways. And then there's that part of your brain that maintains the knowledge of, this is real, I dreamt, I didn't really see that. And I think for some reason, knowing the difference between those things isn't as important to me as it might be to somebody maybe who wasn't a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's all thrown into the same bucket a little more casually, and recognizing what's real as opposed to what's not real, or I don't really care to have that preference. Although, I do try to remember facts about things. Yeah. But
I would think in your daily existence.
But I do notice that I'm very poor at it, so that's like often I'll come to the office when there's no meeting, or I'll miss the meeting on the day that it is, just keeping track of reality.
Well, that's just a failure to write it down.
No, it's there, and I'll write it down, and then
that it was Thursday.
Well, I'll picture it as a day. I'll imagine it. It's on Friday at 9, and then that's much more telling to me than the fact that it's on my Outlook calendar Thursday at 10. And I don't know why I'll reimagine it, but I'll picture it when something's happening. And often I picture it wrong, but that picture of it is what hangs behind. And then I think, do I have some sort of mental problem? But I'd love to attribute it to some sort of the loveliness of being a storyteller.
Yeah.
But I think I'm just a fool.
No, you want to think that it's part of the creative mindset.
Yeah.
When you're just kind of flighty.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I'd hate to overstate anything about storytelling and creativity and art and being an artist, because I don't ever feel that authentically in the pocket of that.
Nobody does.
So I would rather just
It's all faked. Yeah. I think it's all faked. Yeah. I think anybody who has that kind of super artistic, the stereotype of the artist, I think it's all an act. I think the Andy Warhol thing is just ridiculous. I think it's overblown and overwrought.
I think in some ways, though, that
they want to live.
He's
that
a good example because, he's tossing that old goofy mop wig on his head.
Mm-hmm.
He's announcing the ridiculousness of his, he's like saying, this is a put on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to work to see through this. And once you get to that spot, this is make-believe, it's sort of like an actor or a film where you can always see the camera or a mic sitting, you always know.
Mm-hmm.
You can get somewhere different with that. And, I like that.
I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's a caricature of a caricature at some point. Mm. You know, it feeds back on itself.
Well, you end up with a different thing. So you're going to look at Warhol stuff with a different eye than you might with somebody that's not wearing a false white wig or who's, you know, being outlandish in a really enigmatic way, you know, to an end.
Right.
You know, maybe he can't get as deep as, you know, some really serious, sober sculptor. But maybe he can. Maybe he's going somewhere deeper by pointing up the, you know, this kind of falseness that's built into to doing everything that we do. You know, there's sort of a lie built into.
You've completely turned me around.
Thank you.
You've completely turned me around.
Now will you do with what I have done with my armrests? One up, one down.
Okay, you want me to?
Well, just because I think you might like it.
Actually, I'm going to switch sides on that. I'm going to go like this. Yeah. Well, I see what you mean. I like that. I put the right up a good 3 inches higher, and I.
Well, you know, I think we like to think of ourselves as symmetrical beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we like to have things that are in symmetry. So we sit in a chair, we want the armrest at the same level. But I don't know. I noticed that, you know, I think we all walk with a bit of a lean to one side. And you sit in your car and you're driving down the road, you might find yourself at an awkward angle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not sitting dead in the center of the seat with, you know, your whole body could be mirrored one side to the next.
True.
I think we always are slumping and leaning and bending, and then, you know, we get to our chairs and we're like, these armrests have to be symmetrically, everything has to be perfectly in line. But really, we're much more comfortable, like,
it's true,
like bent over at some uncomfortable angles.
We're not perfectly symmetrical. I have my right foot, for instance, is slightly longer and narrower than my left.
Gross.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when I go to get shoes, I notice this. And there are certain brands of shoes sometimes where you don't really notice it because the specifications aren't as close. But for instance, my left foot, I often need, my left foot's a little longer, I should say. I need a 13, where the right foot, I need a 12 and a half.
Well, giant feet and then giant mismatched feet.
Yeah, exactly. I have clown feet and they're not even symmetrical.
That's kind of sad.
But that's true. I don't think we're not perfectly all the time symmetrical, and we certainly don't. When you lie down, do you tend to like lie on one side or the other?
We don't lie like little lines on our bed.
No,
a little straight line.
Not with your hands folded on top of your
right. So
your
belly. We should adopt that kind of non-symmetricality.
I like that idea.
Like they should sell shoes. Like, could you go to the shoe store and say, you know, I really like these, but Can I get 13 in this one and 12 in
no,
this?
I don't. I generally get one size, but I have to tighten the right a lot more than the left. I have to pull the laces tighter, and I can feel like I have room on the toe in the right where I don't in the left. It'll be...
Does that right foot feel like the runt of the litter? Is it like the sad little puppy?
It got neglected. My right foot was more neglected, apparently.
It's the sad little puppy that you called
puppy. It never quite got in to feed. It just did. It was always on the outside looking in.
It's pale and starved. Yeah. It never gets to feed.
Yeah. And it's got a complex about it, too. It's got a little bit of an attitude about it. And when it meets the left, look out.
Do they ever meet? Do they ever talk?
They will fight.
So your left foot basically might kill your right foot if it had the chance.
It tried. It's been trying for a long time. Yeah, I don't think I don't feel that I've talked to other people and they've come up secretly. They're like, you know what? I have one foot that's not quite. I know it's not quite the same. But yeah. So it's like there's a community of people that are like, you know what? Me too. And they raise their hand. Tentatively, they'll raise their hand. Actually, my feet are a little off too.
You know, I've heard this about legs. I think most people are, you know, we have one leg that's longer than the other, but I didn't know that it extended.
Well,
it's
very slight. It's not.
Yours is massive.
Well, I don't think half a. It depends. Some shoes it doesn't feel that different, and some shoes it does. It's strange, isn't it? But it is slightly different. It's almost like half a shoe size different.
Well, can you see it if you're looking down at your bare feet?
No, I don't think so. I mean, well, maybe. I feel like my right foot feels thinner. I have narrow feet anyway.
Well, it's hard to see your own body. Maybe somebody else would look at it and go, look at those freaky things. But
how often do you show your bare feet to people?
Not often.
You don't? I mean, who else would even see my bare feet out in my other than my wife, maybe, and my kids in the house? It's not like we're measuring each other's feet all the time.
No, not often.
Just on alternate Thursdays. Yeah.
Right. It occurs to me as I'm thinking about feet is how animal they are. That's like the foot mm-hmm. is one of the most animal parts of the human being.
So it's a really strange looking thing, foot.
You see a beautiful woman, like a model, mm-hmm. and then you see her feet, and then suddenly it's like you're connected up to the kingdom of the animal.
Yeah, she's just an animal like everybody else. Yeah.
But why should the feet be so telling? You know, it's like the rest, hands aren't really like that. I don't see the animal of the human being in the hand. But there's something about the foot maybe it's just the way that it connects up to the earth,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of like that's where we have to become animals. Like the rest of us is just in the air. We can
pretend you're above.
We're ethereal and angelic.
Yeah.
But then on the ground, we've got these goat feet.
You got to be anchors. Yeah.
These just hooves taking us around.
It's weird. How do we get into this? Now you were talking about how you wanted to talk. You were thinking about lamplighters this week.
Mm.
What were some of the things in your scenario in your head that you were running? What were some of the subjects?
Well, one thing I told you, I talked to Michael about doing. Did you get that? Did I send you an email?
I saw that email. Well, I saw it this morning.
Yeah, by the way, that's another part. That's another place of reality where I've like if I imagine writing somebody an email and then. Sometimes I don't write it, but I imagine it, and then I think I've sent it.
Mm-hmm. You did
so
send it.
No, I often am like...
I saw it after literally minutes before
you came. Do
you
ever have
you
that? Like, I need to send that person an email, and then you kind of compose it in your head,
mm-hmm.
and then later on you don't know whether
you realize you didn't really actually send one. Yeah.
So often I'm like, I reconfirm with people, hey, did I send you an email about this thing? Because I maybe didn't. I don't know. I was talking to Michael about possibly doing AMV episodes for the holidays like we did in mm-hmm. the past. I don't know how many I did, maybe two or three. I'm sort of excited about that idea, and he's kind of enthusiastic, and he's thinking about it, and he likes the idea of doing some programming, you know, that's local and whatever. I don't know whether it'll go anywhere, but one of the things I really was thinking about was, like, I'd really like to, and also because most of the AMV episodes are short, or they're not a full hour, and they need that hour, you mm-hmm. know, or they need to be 2 hours. It needs to be an hour block. And I think most AMV episodes just naturally end up being like 35 minutes. There's something about the timing. Like, I seem to feel like it needs to end at that point. An hour is too long for these kinds of stories. So I've been thinking about, like, how can I mix? Like, can I make an Adam's Motion of the Void episode with the Lamplighters somehow around it or in it or connected to it, a little like how I was thinking, or we were thinking maybe in the past with The Beaten Path as it first started up.
Right.
Some mixture of forms. I can't come up with a good answer to it, but that's where I've sort of been dwelling and sort of daydreaming and mixing, you know, I'm basically pushing these two separate things in my brain together. You know, trying to squish them together and see what sort of juice pours out and what color it looks like and whether it tastes good. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that it sort of excites me even though I have no answer, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't, they don't go together in my brain, but I think there's a way.
In a world where there wasn't a way, two men will find out the hard way about the lack of way.
Now!
Yeah, hey, cool, man. No problem. No problem at all.
Who are you?
Star-Lord.
Who?
Well, Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
They called themselves the Lamplighters of the Galaxy.
What a bunch of a-holes.
What kind of feeling?
So you, are you not going to Guardians of the Galaxy because you don't like sci-fi? Or have you got other things happening?
Well, no, I wanted to be home tonight with the family. We kind of planned to be tonight, hang out. So
What if you didn't have those plans? Would you have been?
But I don't want to see Guardians, to be honest with you, because I'm not really a big sci-fi guy. Like I told you, my wife has been on this kick to show the original Star Wars trilogy, you know, the original films, to my daughters because they've never seen them. And I don't care to live it. It's not that I didn't enjoy them when I was young. And, you know, I get the appeal of it.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of a cultural touchstone. I don't feel the need to see a lot of movies over and over again, but certainly like Star Wars and sci-fi and all that. I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to me. Like, I don't need to see that. I don't do it again. And the Galaxy movie thing looks like a lot of lasers, spaceships, and people in latex suits. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I wouldn't describe it like that. I mean, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
And, but I do, I always like when people don't like particular genres.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I don't like horror movies very much.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, it's not my thing either.
But for me, it's like sci-fi is often, to me, like, for example, did you ever see Battlestar Galactica, the new TV? You probably didn't.
No, but I've heard great things about it. I heard it's a great drama.
Right.
Like, I had a friend who was very into it, and he said, No, even if you don't like sci-fi, you'll love this. I didn't give it a chance. Let's put it that way.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I think that that sci-fi, you know, there are some sci-fi things that are just a bunch of dorks doing, mm-hmm. you know, things in space, and there's nothing else really going on of that matters that isn't just the sci-fi part
mm-hmm.
or just fantasy, really. But something like Battlestar Galactica, it is primarily a drama.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to be set in space, you know, and the pleasures of it aren't the sci-fi pleasures, although those are there. But really, it's just the way these characters are interacting.
I used to watch like Star Trek, like in the 80s, the new generation, whatever it was. I remember watching that and liking that. And because here's my premise. I got bored with that because my feeling is, okay, it's about the people. It's about the drama. And people say that all the time about sci-fi. It's really about the drama, and it just happens to be in a setting in space. Well, then why not just set it in real life? If it really is about people and about the drama, then why not give me a believable scenario other than light speed, sabers, and like Wookiees?
Because
like, why not give me reality?
Rick, that stuff is so cool.
See?
What are you kidding
okay,
me?
Okay, see, now you're admitting it. Really, it is about that, then.
I like
this is another argument I have about people.
Who doesn't like a Wookiee? Why don't you like lightsabers?
If I could have one.
So you just like real?
No, it's not even real. That. I don't mind escapist stuff. That's not it. That's not it.
You do a bunch of guys in it.
I just don't particularly enjoy it. I feel like I see where it goes. I know it's going to happen in some respects. And even when it's really well done, I don't.
Do you think it's silly? Like childish or?
No, sometimes it is. Yeah, sure.
But I mean,
but then again, I like silly childish things too. You know that. I'm far from, you know, reading Shakespeare and drinking
right,
tea.
Right, this isn't a high tone.
No. I told you, I think some of my favorite movies are like Ferris Bueller and Caddyshack. So this is not like a high hobby horse kind of thing. Like I'm, you know.
You're not looking down. You just don't like it.
I just don't enjoy it. Yeah.
Right.
And I don't. Believe me, I have a lot of friends who really do, and I think that's great, and that's fine. I just don't personally, like, I don't want to go to a space epic movie. It doesn't interest me, unless it's like a comedy.
Well, you mean the first film that, I feel like one of the first movies we ever saw was that, what was that thing? I want to call it Avalon.
Avatar.
Avatar, right?
Yeah, and I didn't like it. I thought it was ridiculous. I thought Avatar was, I'll take 9 hours of George Lucas. Over 3 hours of Avatar.
Really?
Yeah. Avatar, I thought, was really just bad.
What about the spectacle? Because we did the whole 3D part.
Yeah,
we did that,
and
we
I didn't like it. I mean, I liked the idea of 3D is great, and it's never pulled off well. I mean, it technically just doesn't work all that well unless you are, speaking of symmetrical, right in the middle of the theater, the projectionist has calibrated the thing perfectly.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's like it has to be perfect. And if I were rather high, it might work a little better.
Well, I think the mistake...
it just doesn't work that well.
I think the thing about 3D that I think it's conceptually a mistake to mm-hmm. think that we want to be more immersed in the experience. I think that what, I mean, I don't know if I'm right here, but I think that we like the distance between ourselves and the screen, and in that distance, a lot of the magical stuff takes place in terms of how we fall into a film. Mm-hmm. And if it starts poking us with things, that space is gone, that distance is gone. But I think that distance is a safety. It's mm-hmm. it's a place within that distance between yourself and the screen. That's where you become the hero, and that's where you start mm-hmm. Living in the world that is unfolding before you. If you take that away, I think you're breaking part of the contract between what the way the story should be, and I don't know. Does that sound like it's
yeah.
anything?
Yeah, and I think it's even more based than that. You could say, well, for a lot of it, it's based on the spectacle. And, you know, well, 3D makes sense for, you know, a sci-fi epic or some, you know, big movie like that, or some spectacle movie. The problem with it is that it's almost like, say you made a great song and you're presenting it to me. You want to play it for me and you put it on the stereo. And it's like, no, you really, this is great. And you turn it up as loud as you can. No, really, it's really great. And you put the speakers right in my face. You know, it's akin to the storyteller trying to tell a story, you know, nose to nose. It's like, you don't have to poke me with it. If it's mm-hmm. really good, you're going to pull me in across that space. Mm. Don't worry about it. I'll buy in. If your content is really good and really, you know, if it's worth it to me, if it's worth my time, you'll pull me in. You don't need to hit me in the head with it.
Mm.
You don't need to take a baseball bat to me. I'll come to it. You don't have to throw it at me.
I think that's the film thing. It's like it's a landscape that we witness. It's mm-hmm. like you get on top of a hill or a ridge and you look down over this expanse. And I think we want to see a film in that same way.
Yeah, that's where the medium works best. Yeah. It you know, they're trying to create virtual reality with it, and that's a whole different thing. Virtual reality is not 3D. And in virtual reality, if you want to get into that someday, if that would ever be anything, if you could control that world, you put on goggles or whatever and you can be in a video game, I think that's a whole different animal.
I think that's where there's, I think the two mediums, between the video game medium mm-hmm. and the film medium are sort of crossing swords
right.
in the 3D realm. And it really is much more of a game
mm-hmm.
thing where you are, when it's 3D and when it's the game, you're in charge of some particular thing and you
yeah.
have to accomplish something. But when you cross over by making a film 3D, I think you're stepping in the wrong territory.
Right.
You're asking the person to be more themselves than a film should ask.
Yeah, because you're like you said, you're up on a hill and you're watching over, you are experiencing, you're watching a story unfold. First off, the technology still isn't very good in most theaters. I imagine if it's fully calibrated in just the right way with the right brightness and you're in the right spot in the room, it could be incredible. But at most theaters, most of your average multiplexes kind of a thing, they've got dim bulbs in the light and the projector. It doesn't look very good. The focus is always a little off, especially if you're not in the center of the room. The color rendering is terrible. You're wearing those dumb glasses, which are scratched and smudged from God knows how many 10-year-olds using them. And you have, it's akin to, for me, being in the audio medium, you meet people all the time who listen to something and they listen with one earbud or one headphone.
Yeah.
And you've mixed this beautiful soundtrack in stereo and then you're hearing half of what's going on in it.
Right.
Or you go into somebody's house and the stereo, they have one speaker in one room and the other, and the stereo mix is completely messed up. This is why Phil Spector used to say back to mono, because okay. you can never really control the environment. You know, it makes no difference to half, you know, most people anyway. It's like, well, then why bother? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Let's just make the story really, really good. Let's make the music really, really good and not worry too much about, you know, the technical details of this.
Hmm.
And the older I get, the more I appreciate that, you know. But I think if I was a younger person, 12 or 13, 14 years old, because I remember being really awed by technology then and, you know, big movies with big screens and surround sound and the idea of 3D, that was a really cool thing. And I think you get to a certain point in your life, you're like, you know what? Just give me some good content.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got something good to say, but don't don't try to dress it up with lots of lasers, wuzzers, and effects.
Well, the interesting thing, like when we were young and the 3D movies came out, they were all about like spears being thrown at you and stuff like that.
But, it was all gimmick. Yeah.
But the modern 3D is much more immersive. You know, the 3D that you're sensing is spatial about the place that the people are in. So if you're in this giant hall, you feel that space of the hall.
Right.
And they don't.
It still feels a little gimmicky to me. I mean, I know that's the idea, and I applaud that.
Well, we still see it, you know, it's like whenever you're experiencing that 3D moment, and they don't come constantly, it's sort of like either it sort of goes away here and there. But when you do have it, you're like, oh, 3D. I mean, now look at this room. It's like I'm seeing the room.
Yeah, but then it pulls you out.
Yeah, definitely.
To me. If you would film it naturally, it's kind of like natural recording and stereo sound. If you do it naturally all the time, it just is immersive. But if suddenly everything is separated in this big stereo field, then it pulls you out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, do it continually or don't do it at all. And I wish they would do that. And they still haven't really done that with 3D movies.
Right.
I don't know. At least the few that I've seen, it still feels like it's gimmicky to me.
Yeah, I think when James Cameron did that Avatar, there was sort of a moment of, is this no longer a gimmick? You know, because the movie cost X million dollars and then brought in X billion dollars. And finally, there was a moment of seriousness around it. Like, maybe this
See,
is
I
finally
didn't.
Crossing.
People say that, but I thought it was a horrible premise for me. I thought it was really badly done. I really didn't like the story at all in Avatar. Hmm. There were blue people in trees. There was, like, the two-dimensional general in charge of killing everybody.
But he had some muscles on him, and he was old.
The crew cut guy.
It was
chiseled out of central casting. And I'm like, oh, really? Really? This is being hailed as the new cinema? It's like, oh, really?
I don't defend it. I don't think it was an A-plus movie. I think it was kind of a B.
Really?
Based on the... Based on the simple visual experience, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a great movie, but it was a unique experience as a cinema goer, and that uniqueness didn't come really out of the story. It was sort of the same old story of whatever. I think there were a lot of like things at the time that, you know, this is like the Pocahontas story, or
yeah.
it's
the Native American story, yeah.
Taken from Disney.
It just seems like every major motion picture is a rehash of any particular story. There really is nothing new under the Hollywood sun.
Right. But, you know, last night Lois and I saw Chef. Have you seen it?
No.
John Favreau?
Yeah.
Oh, it's really lovely.
Is it?
Yeah, it's very simple. Incredibly simple story. One of the weird things about it is that there's, like, hardly anything at stake. You know, it's like a movie without tension. Yet somehow that fact kind of works for it. So it's like John Favreau plays a chef. Dustin Hoffman is his boss. Favreau is... kind of has a bad relationship with his son, although you can tell he could be a great father. He's divorced from his wife, but you could tell they kind of still love each other, and he might be a great husband. He's definitely an amazing chef, but his boss is kind of keeping him down by making him do the same menu over and over and over that he's been doing for years. And then he loses his job, and he kind of goes on the road in this little food truck. And you have no doubt that his life's going to turn around almost instantly. There's really nothing standing in his way. And yet this, you know, 2-hour-long movie without tension that's just sort of really charming and really funny just completely works because there's nothing sort of stopping it. You know, there's no bad guy. I don't know if I've seen a movie that had less tension in it in some ways. And yet I really was like, wow, that's amazing that you can make a film that is that specific without anything.
I'm going to have to watch that because I love that the idea of that. I love the idea of being able to just completely upend this, you know, this decades-old way of doing it.
Yeah, and it's also the other thing that's different about it, the thing that's sort of a redemption story, a man coming back to his, you know, his chef roots, finding his passion, you know, that kind of, you know, it has to be a tired story. But he finds it sort of in pleasures. you know, and it's almost like the lesson of the movie is you don't have to almost be philosophic or philosophical in your life to try to find the meaning. You just have to follow the pleasures of that that are provided. It's like your friend who's, you know, putting the roof on his house.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pleasure. So mm-hmm. it's like the pleasure of consuming food, the pleasure of being with friends, the pleasure of making the food. That's the meaning of life. And there's, you know,
yeah,
that's the lesson.
You don't have to read into it any more than that.
Right. And if you can connect with that, yeah. that's, you did it. That's, mm-hmm. You've gone as deep and as far as anyone can go in terms of what it means to be a person and alive on the earth.
Yeah. It doesn't have to have a, are you hungry? I could hear that.
Mm. I love when my belly rumbles. I don't know, it feels like, I feel kind of kingly and powerful.
It's primal.
Yeah, it's like the tiger in me. I don't get
embarrassed. I like when it announces loudly. It's like, it's I will not be ignored.
Yes. Yes,
we will. We're going hunting. We're going to procure meat. We're going to eat it now. Like, I have announced it, and it's almost like there's another part of you that he's like, you have no say in it. It's like, we're very close. Better do something here, or I'm going to.
I should have brought the mic down, but I was very like polite about
well,
it.
Well, next time we're gonna mic your stomach just in case. Pull that other mic.
It'll
stand
constantly
down.
Be complaining and talking mm-hmm. about this and that. It has a lot to say.
So we've got movies in there. We're talking about movies. Mm-hmm. So I understand the fun of it, and I'm not taking away from that. I just don't enjoy the genre.
What about this? Game of Thrones? Does that fall into the same?
I don't know.
Judgment?
I've heard people say great things about it, and again, I haven't watched it, but I would be open to it.
I mean, I have a thing about like I'm not that interested in medieval stuff.
Yeah,
which I know it's not medieval. It's sort of like fantasy.
It seems like the prog rock of our day. Like remember back in the 70s, Hobbit mm-hmm. rock. Everybody was into like, you know. The Zeppelin and the Yes, and I don't know, we're all like going to go visit
even
Hubble's and yeah, the J.R. Tolkien kind of thing. And I don't know, it seems like it's just kind of we're all into that Hobbit thing right now.
Well, I haven't read the or I haven't watched the TV show. I'm reading mm-hmm. the first book right now. So I just wanted to see, you know,
the book?
Well, it's massive, you know, mm-hmm. it's like a billion pages. And
do we need books like that?
Well, and there's a lot of them. There's like five or six of them out there in the world.
It's like Stephen King-itis, where everybody's writing 800-page.
I'd like to be able to say, like, you know what? There's no place for this on the earth. But, you know, if you can pull it off.
No, if you can pull it off, more power to you.
I'm like on page 500, and I'm still going
yeah,
with it.
You're right yeah. with it.
These are like thin pages. You know, you can see the other side of the print, the other side of the page
really?
Through it. Yeah, which drives me nuts. I mean, I tried to read Game of Thrones like 10 years ago, but I couldn't stand the thinness of the pages. Like that's just you can see the text coming through.
That's awful. It's cheap.
Well, they had that's how they had to do it because this guy writes so much, and maybe he overwrites. Maybe they could take some of it out, but there's an epic thing where you know it's not about how long it is. It's just about you keep mm-hmm. going. It's a long.
But I mean, at any point when you're reading it, and you're on page 500 something. Do you think to yourself, "Well, I'm this committed. I'm only 400 pages away. I'm more than halfway." Or is it like this really has me engaged? I want to dwell in this world a little longer, as long as possible.
I don't feel weary from like I don't feel like I've slogged through. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's a dozen different stories and each one of them has its own interest.
Okay.
So you're being juggled around. Basically you know, you have like 10 or 15 main characters. Each chapter focuses on one of the characters. So the chapter will be John and then you'll follow a bit more of his story as he mans the wall. Or you'll go to Eddard. And or one of his daughters, and they're all surrounding one big epic story, but you get it from their perspective, and they all have their own little problem happening. Mm-hmm. And it stays just engaging by switching to like a small perspective on a larger story. But you know, I went into it thinking like I really don't want to read about guys with swords and kings and you know. Guys with chalices and the, mm-hmm. the whole court thing, but
again, that's a setting.
Yeah, I fell for it. I mean, I wouldn't mm-hmm. say that I'm not a crazy lunatic about it. It's not my favorite thing ever, but it's, you know, it is definitely Lord of the Rings world, but it's not as magical. You know, I'm 500 pages in, and there's just the slightest hint of there being sort of an otherly magical land. You know, beyond this wall, there are these mysterious creatures who, you know, perhaps, and there's like talk of magic, but there's not a lot of wands. There's no Gandalf. You know, it's much more.
There's
about,
no wizards.
No, not that actually have any power. There are some magicians here and there, but they're just regular guys who they
pulling sleight of hand tricks.
Yeah, they're trying to get ahead by pretending to have magic, but nobody believes them really.
Is there kind of a just a very whiff of the supernatural only because at the time there would have been a more of a superstitious culture?
No, there's definitely there's definitely something out there.
Okay,
and you get it at the very beginning. These kind of like magical creatures of some, but they're not like, you don't really get it. You don't even really know what they are, but they kill this little band of characters out in the woods. But then you only hear about these, the others, or the some, what are they? I can't remember. The others are sort of this type of people who haven't been heard of for 8,000 years who live out in the haunted forest and, you know, they have powers, but what they are exactly, we don't know. But I like that it just has this hint of magic, but we don't dwell on it at all.
It's not the day-to-day.
Yeah, it's an interesting, there's no reliance on it. You know, the story doesn't get its propulsion through, you know, people raising wands and casting spells across at crazy hordes of orcs.
Right.
You know, it has its, it makes it much more realistic, and yet it's this strange fantasy land of lords and kings, and it's just really amazingly well thought out, this world. This whole world comes to life, and it's so impressive. I'm impressed by that.
Yeah. It's amazing that people can write that. It's amazing that you could, one human being could sit down and create that entire world.
Yeah.
For hundreds of pages, which is literally, I can't just imagine how many years it took to
and keeping
put
it
that
all
story
intact,
together.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking, like, how does he have this down? Where is this, you know, like, does he have, it's almost like he would have had to read history books, like bunches of books, in order to get the knowledge that he has to write this thing about this place. And yet, I don't know, wherever the fabric of that is, I'm just really impressed by it, because I can't do that at all. I can hardly hold like two characters together in a small imaginary world that I can't quite paint out anyway.
It's frustrating, isn't it, that sometimes you can't blow that world up?
Yeah.
You've got a premise for a story, you feel like this is really interesting, this is I've got these characters that feel alive, and yet I can't seem to really, there's an elastic pulling this world in a little bit. I can't kick it open a little bit more. I can't, without bringing in a whole host of other characters that you have to, that might become not nearly as real to you. I mean, it's hard to do, I think, when you're writing sometimes and you feel really invested in characters, to kick open the doors and say, we're going to really widen this out and blow it up, and we could do that. But then it doesn't seem genuine somehow.
Well, it does seem like when you're writing a story, you are in a kind of a darkness, and you're slowly exploring it with a little candle, you know? And I think the difference, like when I'm reading Game of Thrones, it just feels like there's a sun illuminating this whole planet that this guy can somehow see, you know? I'm like, that, because I'm pushing around my little candle going, is anyone there have anything? Well, you know, like trying to see if there's a table in the corner, and I'm not sure if I can make it out. And he's just like, that's the kingdom of the seven Hales.
Right.
You know, and he knows their whole history and who's there and all the people that, it's just startling, that kind of imagination that just fills in so deeply, so distantly, you know, and completely. And then just remembers it. You know, he has to remember this crazy stuff. Like, I don't envy that.
That is pretty incredible. Yeah, that is. Let's talk about some other things. What have you been doing?
Really, aside from work, not that much else. You know, I've been running a bit. It's not very exciting. Run in the woods. I think I've been trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do. Always. I'm always trying to figure that out. What am I supposed to do? You know, like you see a movie like Chef. That's a movie that will touch upon that. Like mm-hmm. if you're, because this is a man who finds what he should do. And like, so I watch this film and I'm like, first of all, you really want to have a Cuban sandwich because that's what he makes in the food truck, these Cubano sandwiches, and they just look so delicious.
A good Cuban sandwich is very good.
I've never had one.
A good Cuban, it's very hard to do right.
I got that from the film.
Yeah.
I learned that. But the other thing is like, you're like, man, I should open up my own food truck.
Like, that's what I meant to do. Yeah.
Right. Or the metaphorical equivalent. You're like, mm-hmm. what's my food truck? You know, what am I supposed to be doing with my life that connects me up in the way that this connects him up to?
But there's always, everybody's doing that kind of soul searching thing. It's kind of a first world problem. You know, yeah. What am I meant to be doing? Isn't the whole premise maybe false, though, in some ways? I mean, you're always searching.
Mm-hmm.
That's the human condition. You're always wondering, should I be doing this? Would this make me happier than do this? Am I doing this wrong? Other than maybe in extreme situations that are just misery.
Right.
You know, aren't we all kind of, isn't the question kind of a false question in some ways?
No, I think I think you're almost correct. I think the answer is a false answer. I think the question is perfectly valid and that we all spend our time trying to figure that out. But that there actually isn't an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You
okay.
know, it's sort of
right.
like,
that's what you're saying.
But I think there are better answers. You know, so for example, like you do your thing here at the radio station, but you're supposed to be in radio. But where exactly should you be? What's the best use of who you are?
But there's no direct answer. It's kind of like saying, well,
you have to explore
who
around.
Should you be with? Who's your soulmate? Well, that's not really a real premise. I mean, you can there's certain people you could really connect with in life, and there's certain people. You know you couldn't, but there's a whole number of people that if you work at it, you can.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's that whole kind of like, well, what was I mainly meant to do? I was meant to cook.
Right.
Meant to, well maybe, yeah. but.
I think maybe there's, I mean, that's the cinematic lie that I think helps us, though, continue on with the struggle toward. And I don't think there's anything, I mean, there's the struggle toward is exciting, you know, and it's where there's, but it's hard to do. It's hard to figure mm-hmm. out and to trust yourself to do it. You know, like I'm like, should I do music? You know, like when I did the plays, it was like, should I be a performer? Should I be an actor?
Mm-hmm.
Am I a person who writes plays? And I don't think so, you know.
At the time, maybe that's what worked.
Yeah,
and
but
you did it, and you.
I wanted
you
to feel it. I wanted to yeah. see. I wanted to try it on like an outfit of a kind. But you know, but so I think I'm just, I mean, but you know, and I think I come and go between like a place where I'm contentedly working on stuff and then a place where I come out of that and I'm like, well, what should I be really doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe I'll fall into another place of contentedly working on something that's a little bit different than what I was in the past, thinking that maybe it's closer to what, but you know, again, I think that I do recognize that there's not a job that has a title that would perfectly be the thing that I'm supposed to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, like you would. There's not some you know a destination you'd arrive at and say, ah, this is it, and for the rest of my life, this is what I am born to do. I don't. The older I get, the more I see into that kind of thinking actually is detrimental. I think in some ways.
I think, yeah, it could be. I mean, to think that there was a food truck with where you're selling Cuban sandwiches, that's going to be the be all end all of your.
If you have a good Cuban, it might be. I'm just saying, if you have a good Cuban sandwich, that may be the end all be all.
But don't you think there are people that are satisfied?
Yeah, I think so. But I'll say honestly, in knowing some people like that. They are people who would be satisfied doing an awful lot of things because they are very happy people by nature.
Hmm.
They are not depressives or they are not outwardly negative people. They're very positive. They're very optimistic. They are very healthy people in a mental sense, and they tend to be physically healthy too. They just tend to be very uplifting people. And maybe you could attribute that to say, well, that's because they're doing what they should be doing or want to be doing. But I honestly think people like that, it's like a millionaire. You could say, you could take two people of equal upbringing, equal IQ, equal beginnings of life, and one's a millionaire and one is, you know, making an average salary at the grocery store, whatever, what have you. And you could say, well, what makes the difference? Well, that person, the person with $1 million may just be a happier person. They knew what they wanted to do. They were driven from the beginning. The other person may still be fairly happy, but maybe they don't have that same kind of something in them. And I don't think that necessarily, I forgot my point.
Well, should we all be resigned to our fates? You know, does it ever occur to you like, oh, I'd really like to do this. Maybe that's what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
But then on the other
but
side,
you could go and try that. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be like you were meant to do that. I don't know if there's anything for that. I think if somebody is generally a happy, uplifting person, you could take them out of that context sometimes and they would find a way to be happy in whatever else they were doing.
Can I just say that I want to make them unhappy. I want to make this perfectly healthy, very well adjusted, physically perfect specimen. I want to bring them down a little bit.
Well, it's not like they wouldn't have moments of self-doubt. I'm sure they do. They may have gone through that process like you were talking about, that they've tried to find what they did and they found some kind of area that made them happy. But I think that in a lot of cases, everybody's a little different, but they were probably generally pretty happy going through those phases of trying this or trying that and doing this or doing that. And they may not want to do the same thing all their lives. They may be very happy and very contented. But 5-10 years down the road, they may decide, you know what, I've done that. I'm going to go and do this now.
Maybe.
Because I'm not, you know.
I mean, maybe the food truck of their soul isn't the thing that I'm thinking it is, which is like the thing that you do. Maybe that it's a different place. Maybe the reason that they're happy is because of a different thing. It's not the job that they do. It's somehow something they discovered that's far before that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just some other way of being in the moment or being, you know, enjoying what they have. Or
it's that prerogative kind of to work to live or live to work.
Yeah,
you know, and what is really satisfying to you. And I think a lot of people like to try a lot of different things too. I mean, you kind of wonder, okay, could this chef, okay, now he's traveling the country, he's got his food truck and he's making the ultimate Cuban sandwich, but is that his world forever?
Right.
You know, is that really going to satisfy his soul for 25 more years of his life? Probably not.
Right. But I think it's really him, you know, there's really something about him connecting up to something that's important to him and doing it well. That's all it is, you know.
Sure, I can understand that.
And in that, he, you know, his relationship with his son blossoms. You know, he's possibly going to mend his relationship with his wife, and he kind of finds himself in that. And I think in some way, I believe in that in a temporary kind of way. Like you're saying, is that going to be there his whole life? Probably it won't. But those moments of connection, I think, are what we rely on as, you know, like markers of whether we feel like we can be happy or not. And if we don't have those little pieces, those little fragments of standing on top of the mountain and going, wow, what a beautiful place. I love being alive. I love the people around me. I don't know if we can trust that, you know, there's anything there for us. And so maybe these things are temporary. Maybe these quests are.
But everything's temporary,
fruitless,
really,
yeah.
If you want to get down to it, yeah. I mean, existentially speaking, right? I mean, life is fleeting, so.
It's very fast, and it's increasingly fast, and I think you're speeding it up. But you press some button that's making my life go much too quickly. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think that's all familiarity. Like, I love ritual day after day. I sort of love it, and I also sort of hate it, you know, because
sure.
It's sort of like, here I am again, writing. Oh, but I like it. But, I'm going to interview someone. Cool, but I did this already.
Mm-hmm.
But, that same day feeling, I think that's the thing that makes life feel like it's just, a train moving ever faster. You know, the same thing out the window all the time. And it just, this more same it is, the quicker it goes. And yet it's hard to bring novel experience in.
It's true.
And I don't want to. I'm afraid of novel experience. It's scary. You know, even like doing Lamplighters is a novel experience because maybe we won't have anything to talk about. Maybe we'll just stare at each other and like go, I don't know.
That's a podcast.
No.
It's your stomach grumbling and...
Your feet.
And my feet.
We could do a show
The sound of my feet growing at a different rate.
I wonder what that would sound like. If we were like sound designers and we had to do that for a movie.
What would you use for that? We'd use your stomach. That's what we'd do. We'd use your stomach.
My stomach is the sound of your feet. I think we've established a deeper truth.
We found our calling on this podcast. Yeah. Your stomach is the sound of my feet. I don't know if I like the sound of that. Well, it makes me nervous.
It should not be connected.
But there you are, see? It took us a while, but we came all the way around to that.
Right. How long have we gone here?
We've gone 57 minutes here.
Is that both including the first part?
Yeah, that's from
altogether?
Start to
oh,
to
I
now.
See. You just did a continuation. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I paused it when you stepped out. Take a break. And it's about
take a break.
Take a break. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to hit upon? Should we talk about anything else?
I think that's pretty good. I think we we can talk about other things at dining hall.
At dining hall. We're going to the dining hall. We'll go to lunch. I think sometime we should bring a recorder and just record lunch if it's not too loud a place.
I have a recorder.
Do you?
Yeah. Why don't we go talk? We'll just record, and then if there's anything there, I'll throw it on at the end.
That might be interesting. But like, we're going to change settings. Yeah. We're going to leave the studio.
Let's take them with us.
We're going to take you with us.
It's
now.
It's like 3D.
Our four dedicated listeners. Do we know if our listeners like get through very much of this podcast? Do they listen to much of it? Or is it like 5 minutes and like, okay, we got it. It's two older guys. They're talking about the 80s and John Hughes movies.
If anyone's out there still listening, just let us know.
Yeah.
Because this is you know, near the end of the thing, unless this big restaurant plan works out well and it sounds great. But yeah, let us know.
We just generally do it for our own amusement, but we want to know if anybody else is truly amused by it.
Someone wrote me the other day about the cigarette machines that we talked about.
Oh, really?
I don't remember if that was at the beginning. Was it?
That was the last thing we talked about. Yeah, the cigarette machines.
And
I don't know where that was in the lineup.
It was at the beginning.
Yeah.
But, I have no idea. And I don't know how to know that.
I don't either. You know more about it than I do.
No, I don't. I just
know that we record it and you put it out there somehow.
Yeah.
On the interwebs. That's all I know.
A couple of people wrote back about the last one on the Radio Ghost site. There's a couple of comments there. Did you see those?
I didn't, no.
Why don't you go there?
I should, well, I...
You should look it up.
I will. Maybe what we should start doing is commenting on the comments. Like if people want to comment or send in topics or their opinions on something that we talked about, we could revisit it and use their opinions. You know, like viewer mail. Like listener mail.
That's a good idea. We'll do that.
You know?
So any kind of comment that comes in, we are going to, if there's only one, we're going to really dwell on it.
Right.
But if there are many,
if there's five
we'll
or six
respond
of them,
all of them.
Well, we'll do, because, you know, but what's the max? Maybe half a dozen? I mean, we're not going to get
it. I don't think there should be a max.
No, there isn't.
We don't have to send them.
What I'm saying is I think I'd be pleasantly surprised if there were many.
I think we'll get a couple.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So comment on the Radio Ghost site. Let us know you're listening. What you think about what we talk about. Maybe talk about what suggests something. We're open. It's completely open.
It is.
Yeah.
When has it not been? That's because we're completely unguided and ungoverned by any kind of like form.
Right.
This is formless.
Formless enterprise. We're just amoebas. We're boneless. We're boneless chicken.
We're lamplighters. Right?
We're just right.
We light whatever lamp there is to light.
You bring the lamps and we light them.
Yeah. We'll leave the light on. A little brighter. See you at the restaurant, Rick.
Wherever he would go, the old lamplighter of long, long ago. His snowy hair was so much whiter beneath the candle glow. The old lamplighter of long, long ago. the patter of his feet as he came toddling down the street. His smile had a lonely heart, you see. If there were sweethearts in the park, he'd pass a lamp and leave it dark, remembering the days that used to be. For he recalls when dreams were new, he loved someone who loved him too, who walks with him alone in memory. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go. The old lamplighter of long, long ago. Now if you look up in the sky, you'll understand the reason why the little stars at night are all aglow. He turns them on when night is here. He turns them off when dawn is near. The little man we loved of long ago. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go.